Thank you, Joe. And thank you for your service to this meeting. I was going to talk about humility tonight, but there aren't enough people here. So just give you a second for that one to see. It's so wonderful. I see so many people that I've met before and that I know. Nancy, my God, I got sober in Los Angeles in 1984, but I also got abstinent in Los Angeles in 1986. And I've known Nancy probably that long, yeah, from the very beginning, back when. So here's my story. Basically, I'm going to share about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And by the way, if you're new tonight and you didn't raise your hand, and just because you are shy and don't want, you're just listening at this point, I'm just so glad you're here. I am so glad you're here tonight. And we were all new. Everybody here was new at one time. So we all know what it feels like to be new in this program. And it's not a lot of fun at the beginning. It's like you come in here out of desperation. I like that thing, G-O-D, gift of desperation. That's what brought me into OA. My mom put me on a diet when I was 12 because I came home crying because the kids were teasing me about being fat. And she sent me to school with apples, which are fine, but celery sticks and hard-boiled eggs. And I immediately, my friend Billy gave me his sandwich. And so I was sneaking food and had shame around food and eating and started dieting very early. And that diet mentality had sunk in. And It was just horrendous because I didn't know I was addicted to certain foods. I didn't know that there were certain foods that set up cravings for me. I had no idea that that was what was going on, and no one else did either. Nobody knew about compulsive eating that I knew. And I found out about OA through AA. And I originally came into OA when I had about a year and a half sober. I weighed 320 pounds. I came in because I was lonely, and it wasn't that I was looking for women in OA. I was just looking for a companion somewhere. And I thought that the reason I wasn't with anybody was because of my weight. I didn't realize it might have something to do with my personality. And the fact that I still had all these character defects that I hadn't dealt with, and I still had no idea of how to deal with my emotions. Not a clue, except to eat at them. You know, I was using, instead of the alcohol and the drugs, now I was using the food. And I can sit in front of a television set with a feed bag of hyper-palatable taste bombs that were manufactured specifically for the reason of me to get them and not want to stop eating them. I found it really interesting that there was a show called Breaking Bad, and there was a Super Bowl commercial this year that was instead of methamphetamine, instead of crystal meth, it was a bag of snack food. And I thought, finally, truth in advertising. And they're finally coming around. At least they're not pretending anymore. And, you know, we all grew up with things that food is love, and television and all over the place, you'd hear things like Pillsbury had a commercial, bake someone happy. Oh, you bet. Please bake me happy. So I came into OA. My first experience was someone who had 3 months sober, who had gone into one of the factions of OA that had a specific food plan, and it was very rigid. And if you broke your food plan, you went back to day one and all that. And she told me she was going to be my sponsor. She had 3 months sober in AA, and it terrified me. And I lasted about 2 days in that. Then I found out there was another OA, which was much more, why don't you develop a plan of eating with your food, with your sponsor? And that helped me a lot. Here's what I know basically about, here's my food plan today. I know that I can't eat sugar and I can't eat flour because they set up huge cravings for me. I do 3 weighed and measured meals a day. I track them in the morning before I even eat a bite. I've already tracked what I'm going to eat, and I commit it to a sponsor. And I don't think everybody needs to do that. I don't know. I don't think. Oh, and Joe, I didn't even know how long am I speaking for?
You have 45 to 50 minutes.
Wow. Okay. You don't get. I will see if I can stick it out. I'm so enthusiastic about recovery because it saved my life. I have done things and gone places that I never would have gone if I was still had that little tiny life I had where I was sitting in front of the TV eating all the time. And that was a very small life. My life is huge now and I'm loving it. Basically, you know, all those diets I had tried before and the sneaking, the eating and what's interesting is that I've found in over the years in OA that I can go back to, if I start to trend upward in my weight and I panicked as I have at times, I have started to use my plan of eating almost like a diet again. And it's a means of trying to control. It's not surrender, because those are the two things. I'm either surrendered about my food, and I've surrendered it to God and asked God to help me with my what I eat, when I eat, where I eat, how much I eat, and then talk to a sponsor about it, because I absolutely believe that God works through people. We are in here. We have God with skin on. It's basically God gets messages through to me when. I mean, I like the direct conscious contact, but I also need to listen carefully to people who have what I want in terms of abstinence and attitude and how their lives are going. And they will give me direction and suggestions on actions to take. Nobody tells me what to do. I went through a phase where I was sponsoring people. I'm kind of jumping around here. I'm going to kind of go back to the beginning again. So I got it right away in OA. I got the food plan. I started using a plan of eating and I started losing weight. And pretty soon, because we often judge by appearances, even in OA, sometimes we judge by appearances. I had lost the weight and people saw that I had the physical recovery. And I guess I was talking the talk. I was talking the talk. And I probably had at that point a modicum of recovery. And I got asked to speak at the Thalians meeting, which was the biggest meeting in Los Angeles. I see Nancy nodding her head. It's one of the places we used to go. And the founder was often at the meeting. And I got asked to speak. Well, this went right to my head. And I just was so full of myself after I spoke at Thalians and sure that I really had it. And I was sponsoring some and was telling people how they needed to abstain. And well, pride comes before the fall. And I fell, I relapsed. And I'm guessing there are a lot of people in this meeting who have been in recovery for a long time, who have gone through these periods of getting off track. My current sponsor is a wonderful guy named Lee. And Lee talks about, and I kind of like this, is that lapse, relapse, and collapse. And he uses the analogy of a lapse is you're driving down the road and there's four lanes and they're dotted white lines on either side of you. And you happen to go a little over one of the dotted white lines and you don't hit another car and you get back in your lane. He refers to that as a lapse. And then relapse is I'm stalled, flat to side of the road, I'm not going anywhere. And there's something I'm going to have to change. I love on the OA.org website, there are great, wonderful, in fact, I think there's somebody else a couple of people I've seen at the World Service Business Conference that I know are on here. And OA.org has a wonderful resource, wonderful resources. There's a new document called The First 12 Days, which because people are reticent about sponsoring, that you can, if you don't know if you're going to be able to sponsor yet or whatever, because even though you've been all through all 12 steps and you want to try temporary sponsorship, you can take a newcomer through these first 12 days. And it goes through the pamphlet, Where Do I Start? It goes through that whole pamphlet and you discuss it with the person you answer questions. It's really, it's a pretty good pamphlet. There's also one about bin slipping and sliding. a reading and writing exercise. And so for the people that have been, that have struggled in this program, I would really highly recommend that. It really just shows me, what am I doing? Where am I complacent? How do I need to get back on track? So fast forward through the years, I kept going to OA on and off. I was doing hit and run OA. I was doing drive by OA. I was going, I would get a commitment, maybe at the kitchen sink meeting, and which when it was still at the Lions Club, and I would be the coffee maker. Or at one point I actually co-secretaried with Carol at that meeting, and or I was the greeter at the at, in the front. And but when the commitments would run out, sometimes I wouldn't get a new commitment. I think service is a wonderful way to stay in recovery. And I also will never tell, I don't tell people keep coming back. I say, don't go away. No matter what, no matter what's going on with your food, no matter what's going on, just don't leave OA. Because look, I don't think people are going to, nobody's going to do this at you. They're not going to wag their finger. They're going to be, what I have found here is I have found radical compassion, radical love. I found radical acceptance in OA. It really is true. I was skeptical at first when I ran into so many happy people who were genuinely happy and genuinely cared about what happened to me. I thought, because I was so cynical and so skeptical and such a pessimist when I came in, and everything was dark, and the way I saw things was so were so dark. So I saw these people who were genuinely happy, who genuinely could, you know, they'd say, let us love you till you can love yourself, and they meant it. Let us love you till you can love yourself. And so at 14 years, 12 or 14 years sober, my dad died and I was left a pretty substantial inheritance. And I had been debting, so I paid off all my bills, but I had gotten really complacent about my program. And so what happened is I got up to 385 pounds. And this was after I had been in OA. I knew what to do in OA. I knew. And it is miserable. I was isolating a lot. I wasn't working because I had all this money. I squandered that inheritance in 2.5 years. And I was back to sneaking, and I owed my landlady money, and I was sneaking out the back of the house I was living in. It was horrible. I was barely going to one AA meeting. It's amazing I didn't drink again, but I had the food. And I had other behaviors that I could, that I was doing. Because when I do the first three steps in the morning, I do them every morning. I make a little mark on a paper and I say, I'm powerless over fill in the blank. And I've got a long list of things, behaviors and things that I'm powerless over, substances and behaviors. And so I'm multiply addicted. I can't even drink coffee in moderation. I've tried over and over again. I used to smoke a pack and a half of cigarettes a day. I not only drank before I got sober in 1984, I was doing other drugs too. A lot of marijuana, all that stuff. This is OA, so I talk about food here because food has been the most challenging of all because it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's all the time. And you go to parties and you go to things. There's food that I can't eat. That is not my, I can eat. I'm going to take that back. I choose not to eat. Because if I start saying, I can't eat that, if I say I can't, that makes me a victim. I am not a victim. I choose not to, but that's also kind of a paradox because if I lost the power of choice with food, and if you're new, that's the thing, is that I really, at the beginning, I had lost the power of choice. What happens is as I started to work the steps and find a conscious contact with a higher power and learn to rely on a higher power, there's a line in the AA Big Book that says, we felt new power flow in. It doesn't emanate, it doesn't come from me, it doesn't originate in me. It doesn't originate in me. But we get the power of choice back. I can say now that there are certain foods that I just don't eat today. This 24 hours, I don't eat them. I may choose to eat them tomorrow, but just for this 24 hours, I don't eat those foods. And I know all about weight discrimination like a lot of you do. I know that people judge us by our appearances. What I found out in here is that how I look and what I weigh, my weight is more about health now. It's not about vanity. It's not about how I look. It's about whether or not I'm going to live a full life. So what happened when I was 385 pounds is I knew I was in trouble. And I got a call out of the blue from one of the women who was my original, in AA they call them Eskimos, because they kind of helped you. She was, when I was a patient on a psych ward before I got sober, she was a psych tech nurse, and the doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. She spotted it immediately, and I stayed friends with her. Well, she called me out of the blue. She asked how I was doing, and I was in enough pain to tell her the truth. And this is a woman, Paula pulls no punches. She said, get your ass to a meeting. It was an AA meeting, but she said, get your ass to a meeting and call me when you get back. And I did, because I trusted her, and I knew she wanted to help me. She said, okay, so go to another meeting tomorrow and call me. I went after the meeting, because I wasn't calling my sponsor. So action does become the magic word here. I'm not going to figure everything out. It's not about what I'm thinking or my profound thoughts or any of that. It's more about what actions am I taking, because what I do, and it's usually what everybody else in here has done. There are certain actions, going to meetings, getting a sponsor, working the steps, that anybody who has had success in here and long-term abstinence, they're all doing pretty much the same thing. A lot of service, little bits of service sometimes, baby bites of service, reading something at a meeting like was done tonight, or hosting on Zoom. We have a meeting, I'll get to that. Better take a breath and a sip of water. Cheers. After I'd gone to a few of these AA meetings, there was a woman there who was 7 years sober, and she was going through a divorce, and she was sobbing. She was crying hard. And she just committed to the whole meeting that she was going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, I was also in a tremendous amount of pain at the time, and I didn't want to get shown up. So I committed to the group that I was going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And then I thought to myself, what the hell did I just say? What? But I had drastic times call for drastic measures. And so I recommitted to, then it was AA. And I went to the Serenity Sunday meeting, and there was a guy there that called himself Grateful Jack. And he was pretty new in recovery, but he shared that in the first paragraph of How It Works in the big book that was read tonight, the word honesty is mentioned 3 times. And honesty is one of the 3 essentials of recovery, along with keeping an open mind, which means that I need to stay teachable. Even now, you know, with all my vast, it's like 3 of the most important words in my vocabulary are, I don't know. I don't know. And if I don't know, I don't pretend to know. If I'm sponsoring somebody who has kids, I don't have kids. I don't know how to parent. I don't have any experience with it. You know, I might know somebody in program who is a really good parent and ask them if they connect about that stuff. So honesty, willingness. I don't gotta wanna. That's just, I had a sponsor in LA named Cubby, and Cubby was amazing. And Cubby was, he's been gone for years, but whenever I get into that place of procrastination and complacency, or when there's something that's been suggested to me that I know is going to help me but I don't want to do it. He says, you don't got to want to. I can hear Cubby saying, you don't got to want to. You don't do it anyway. You can be in a, I can be in a crappy mood. No, it's not that Cubby. In fact, I won't tell you, he was actually a famous author. And two of his books got made into movies, but his name wasn't that at the time, but anonymity, right? And if I told you, it would be trying to impress you, and that is not, my ego is still, I'm telling you, I got to keep working on the ego thing all the time. E-G-O, edging got out, right? That's one of my character defects that I got a lot of help with in Al-Anon, was this desire to impress, this desire to let you know, to get validation and approval from people. And, you know, I was talking to my cats the other day, and I realized I heard my father's voice coming out of me, which was, you know, was calling him dummy. My dad used to call me dummy, and make up your feeble little mind. Well, you know, that kind of stuff, you hear that stuff often enough, you internalize it. And it's not about blame, because I really am jumping all over the place tonight. There's not a lot of cohesion here, but I started going back to meetings. I went to those 90 meetings in 90 days, and I realized I needed to go back to OA. So I went back to OA, and I got it. I was a chronic relapser. Even after that, even after getting up to 385 pounds, I relapsed big time again. When I got married, I was doing really well in OA, and then we moved out of Los Angeles, and we moved to Salem, Oregon. But my wife and I became binge buddies. And I was back at 320 pounds again, and one night she turned to me and said, "It took me so long to find you, I'm afraid I'm going to lose you." And after a binge, the next morning, I'm sitting on the edge of the bed and beating myself senseless about, with everything you know about recovery and everything you know about the 12 steps, how can you still be doing this? And thank you, God, the still small voice came through and said, if you're beating yourself up about this, you must not believe you're powerless. You must still think you have control. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. And there was another guy named Joe who was living in Portland at the time, Joe Kay. And Joe was in both programs. And somebody had given me his number, and I called him. And he was loving and kind and gentle and made some suggestions of things for me to do. And I started to do them, including go see a healthcare professional. Now, the healthcare professional was pretty jaded. She was a dietitian. She just handed me the diabetic diet she handed everybody and didn't expect anything, I'm sure. And it reminded me of one of those the pretty strict food plan that some people use in here, and with the crazily, seemed like really crazy small portions to me. And I took it to Joe and I went, "Ah!" And Joe said, "Well, why don't we just increase this a little bit? You know, you weigh yourself maybe once a week or once a month, you know, see how you're trending." And I started to follow a plan of eating. And I went back to OA, because I was going to the OA meetings, and there weren't a lot of OA meetings in Salem, Oregon. They were very small, and there wasn't a lot of recovery there. And I was there with my folded arms, taking everybody's inventory except my own. And, you know, I've been in the real blah, blah, blah. It's just arrogant and egotistical, until I got in enough pain. And I remember going to a meeting one day and just bursting into tears. And this lovely woman, Pat, put her arms around me and gave me a hug and said, "It's going to be okay." And it's always about surrender. And one of the AA gurus in Los Angeles, who has since passed on, he used to talk about, you know, when we first come into recovery, we throw in the towel. And for most of us, the towel doesn't stay in there. we snatch the towel back and we rip off little pieces of it and toss those into the room. And so it's like these mini surrenders. It's not all one big surrender. And I got back on track, and that was in 2011, and was in Salem for a couple more years. And then I came to Houston, and Houston had a club called the Oasis Club. And I started going to the club, and that's where I met Joe. It's where I met Helen, some of the other people that I've met that, you know, it's, I was working my program and I was getting service commitments and I was staying in the thick of it because that's what I have to do. And we were only in Houston. We were in Houston less than a year and we had to move again. We were moved to Lincoln, Nebraska. And again, small meetings, not a lot of people. The only man in Lincoln who was in the OA meetings. And so I got a woman sponsor, and my wife knew about it. Knew she had good recovery. And I got involved there. I got involved in the inner group. I got involved. That was my first place I was a World Service rep. And I got to go to Albuquerque. And my wife went with me. I told you she was a binge buddy. And we were out to dinner one night with some of the people from my committee, I think, or the region. It might have been from Region 4, some people from Region 4. And my wife leaned over and whispered into my ear. And she'd tried OA when we were in Oregon, but she was doing it for me. She wasn't doing it for herself. But she whispered to me, "I wish somebody would 12-step me." And I panicked. I just panicked. I called my Al-Anon sponsor. I excused myself from the table, but I told somebody before I left. My wife just asked if somebody might 12-step her. And I just left. Because I know, you know, I can't, you know, it's detached. It's like she works her program. And she got it. She started getting it. And then she lost it and started dieting again. And try the yo-yo dieting. And so what I know is if I stay in the thick of this thing, if I absolutely, I told you, I make a little dot on the paper in the morning that says I'm powerless over fill in the blank, and I can't manage my own life. Left to my own devices, I can't manage my time. I just can't manage. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's become something else, and it may for you too. It's came to know. I know that my higher power is my sanity. And if you have problems with the name God, you know, if you're agnostic or atheist or something, and the word God, the name God is a problem. I heard something else I loved at a meeting, which was that use the word as a container word. G-O-D, and put whatever works in there for you, because you're going to hear God at meetings all the time. So whatever works for you, put that into that G-O-D, put it in there. And I liked that. I really liked that. That helped me a lot. Because when I first came into recovery, I had had some religious abuse growing up. So the God thing was really tough. You know, my first meeting was when I was 20, and I went to one meeting, and not only did they say God all the time, at the end they held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. And I was very polite, and I smiled, and I shook their hands, and I was gone in a flash and didn't come back for many years. I finally got it through that when someone suggested, why don't you make a list of what you want your higher power to be and what you don't want your higher power to be, and start to communicate with what you want your higher power to be, or what you think your higher power could be. And that was how I got started. Also, that quote in the appendix called Spiritual Experience in the back of the big book was also the thing that helped me a lot. That Herbert Spencer quote says, and it's been attributed to him, some people, there's some debate as to whether it was actually him who said it, doesn't matter. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And that means I'm so certain of how things are, and nobody's going to change my mind, and I'm right and you're wrong. Period. No, pry my mind open. Go get teachable. Go investigate. And so I did. I went on this journey. I was living in LA. It's a melting pot. Every religion in the world is there. So I went here and I went there and I went all over the place. And I started to find that many of the principles seem to be inherent in all of them. You know, self-honesty, introspection, the same stuff that's in here. And that's why this works so well. This works so well because we also have a thing, and a few years ago, they formalized it because we had all these different denominations of food plans in OA. There's something called unity with diversity. What a wonderful idea that is. And that means if our body chemistries aren't the same, if our metabolisms aren't the same, then maybe there are foods that I'm susceptible to that you're not susceptible to. Maybe there are differences in that. And maybe what works for you as far as maybe you need 5 meals a day, 6 meals a day. Maybe you need, and that was something that was really, really helpful. And live and let live is one of the slogans. And so I don't want to pretend that I know what's best for someone else as far as their food plan or with how they get through the steps. I've gone through the steps a bunch of different ways. And they've all, most of them have worked. And if they didn't work, it probably wasn't the steps. It was how I approached it, my perceptions, my perspectives. And that's something else that needs to stay open is how I see things. Am I willing to change my perspective? Am I willing to look beyond appearances? And that has become so important for me, so important for me. I screw up all the time. I had a little bit of a, not with, sometimes with the food, I have little glitches there and here and there, but my current food sponsor, who was my sponsor when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, I text her my food every morning. And if I go off track, I'm as sick as my secrets. So I immediately tell her, oops, went off track. And then the next day I send her my food. It's a new day. The name of the meeting that I started a meeting during the pandemic. I started to trend upward in my weight and I knew I was getting off track. I knew it was not good. So I knew I needed help and I knew I needed people in OA. And so after I do that second dot on the piece of paper, I say the third step prayer. And that's my third dot on the paper. And in the big book, it said the wording was optional. So I like to play with the words of the prayers. And here's what. So the way it's written is, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. May I do thy will always. But how about this? God, I'm yours. Thank you for building with me and doing with me as you have, as you do, as you will. Thank you for thank you for relieving me of the bondage of self today so that I can best do your will. And thank you for transforming difficulties. And that I transcend these difficulties because this victory, these triumphs absolutely bear witness to any and all I am able to help of your love, your power, your joy, your love, your peace, your way of life. May I do your will always. May I do your will always. Because, like I said, I am capable of I can complicate a one-car funeral. I can pole vault over mouse turds. You know, little tiny things become great big things. I need day at a time to check in with somebody else in this program, make sure that I am staying on track. And when I get off track, not beating myself up about it, just recognizing We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines, right? And then giving other people a break too. When I get really hard on myself and critical and judgmental of myself, guess what happens? You become my targets. I'm looking for your Achilles heel. I'm looking for your Achilles heel. That's a good sign that I need to do some inventory. If I start seeing, you know, if you start to annoy me too much, it's not you. It's not you. It's something that I've got to get to. Usually it's perfectionism, expectations. Those are almost always when I do a 10th step, when I'm doing a 10th step. And just having these unrealistic expectations or watching too much news. I've just had to really back off because my perception of the world has kind of been skewed, let's say. I think that maybe what we're, again, there's just, I'm giving some opinions in here, and anything that I say is not directly out of our literature or out of the big book or out of our literature. It's just my opinion based on my current experience, and it's subject to change. But I was watching way too much news, and I saw it was affecting me emotionally, mentally, physically, every single way. So I went on a news plan. I check out a few headlines from what I consider to be a neutral source. It's going to tell me who, what, where, when, and how. And it's helped me tremendously. And now I see that I'm guessing that maybe 5-10% of what's going on in the world is what's shown to us in these things. And what's really going on is most, you get to people one-on-one, people are wonderful. You don't know their politics or their religion, and you just talk to them out on the street, you know, have these great conversations. And, you know, it's made life much more livable for me and a lot less scary. And there's a lot, I know there's a lot of scary stuff going on, but that's why I have to stay in the moment right here, right now. It went from being one day at a time. Sometimes if I'm doing 1 hour at a time, because right here, right now, every single one of us, I'm guessing everybody here has got food, shelter, and clothing. So our needs are met, right? If I really start getting full of self-pity, all I need to do is think globally. I didn't have to walk several miles today to get some clean drinking water. You know, these are things that I consider that are really, you know, when I do that quiet time in the morning, I can be quiet, by the way. 10 left. Oh, thank you, Joe. I got to talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened. So I got back on track. I haven't left. I'm not leaving ever again. No more drive-by OA. No more hit-and-run OA. I'm in this thing. If we can get the money to go to Albuquerque in April, we'll be going there. And maybe I'll see some of you there, I hope. And that's an amazing thing because it can get really heated at the business meetings, but anybody has a point. Point of privilege, personal privilege, whatever. You can call for one of the prayers, the serenity prayer, the third step prayer. And the energy in the room changes. It can be really tense. And the minute one of those prayers is said, the energy, right? Some of the people that have gone, see the heads nod? And you have these little conversations in between the functions that end up being some of the most treasured conversations of your recovery, you know, and it's like recovery on steroids. It's kind of like it's OA on steroids. It's terrific. It's terrific. If you ever get a chance to be a World Service rep, jump at the chance. It's amazing. So I do this thing for years. I've been in the habit of getting up in the morning early, reading the two daily readers, writing. And sometimes I write what I heard referred to as two-way prayer. Some people call it something else, but whether it's a real conversation on paper or an imaginary conversation with my higher power, I'll leave that up to you to decide. It sure feels real because some of the stuff that comes back, sometimes I'll write with my little sign, I'll write. I'm not sure what, I'll ask a question to my higher power, and the answer that'll come back is, you already know the answer to that. It's like, that's like, God knows me better than I know myself. And so I was doing this, and the pandemic hit, and I thought, I really need some more people. So I started this daily. It's called the New Day Meditation Meeting, and the format of the meeting is, it's great. It's all early risers for the most part, those of us who get up early, and some people aren't on camera and they leave their mics off because they're getting ready for work or whatever. But we say the Serenity Prayer. We do the two daily readers. Oh, we read the steps. We do read the two daily readers. Then we have a 10-minute meditation, which people can journal or get ready for work or do whatever they choose to do during that. And then we have open sharing until quarter till the hour. And it's at 6 a.m. Central Time. So, but we've had a couple of people from L.A. recently that are up at 4. And then we, after the sharing, we read the third step prayer, seventh step prayer, the 11th step prayer. And then there's a couple of people on here that have been to the meeting. And then we have another 10-minute meditation. And then we close out with the Serenity Prayer and have fellowship afterwards. And it went from, there were two or three of us showing up for the longest time, four, five, six. But it's grown. It's not as big as this. This is huge. This meeting is gigantic. we're hitting 50 and 60 now every day. And we've got people from England and coming over, and it's wonderful. And it's saved me. And it's really structured now. We got service commitments, and we've got a spreadsheet for people to sign up for service and all that. Thank you, Joe. And Joe, oh my God, Joe. Joe was there for me from the day when I first met him in Houston, and I was freaking out about all the changes, because you move that many times and your things keep changing. You learn, what you learn is that change is a constant in life, and you learn to, I love that REO Speedwagon song, roll with the changes. Keep on rolling, baby. Keep on rolling. And you get adaptable. You become, although I do like my routines, but I can carry my routines with me. So life has gotten so big. I've been several on cruises into the Caribbean, and I went on a cruise that went, the Scandinavian cruise that ended up in St. Petersburg, Russia, and we went to the Hermitage Museum, and I've been ziplining. For my 60th birthday, I jumped out of an airplane at 10,000 feet. Oh my God, got to sing on America's Got Talent with it. My wife and I met in a choir, and we got to sing on America's Got Talent, and the choir went on to keep winning almost up to the end. And what else? I got to sing at one of the conventions, and we sang backup for Stevie Wonder and Luther Vandross and Mary Chapin Carpenter. And I mean, life has been so full because of recovery, not because of Tom at all, but you guys right now, each and every one of you are helping me with my recovery. Together we get better. I can't do this alone. There's something else you need to know, and you may not have heard this. I write down also, along with that stuff and my journaling and all that, now I'm writing five things I'm grateful for, at least five things, and then et cetera, because there's so much. But I'm also writing down five things I like about myself, and I learned that from you. You know, because we have got these qualities that we just, there's a lot of emphasis on the character defects. What about the character assets? It's a balance sheet. It says so in the big book. So write down, five things you like about yourself, because everybody in here has talents and abilities and skills and capacity for love and reliability and responsibility and creativity and, oh my God. And I get to share my life with you. And I'm going to finish a couple minutes early, but I just want to say this. I love each and every one of you, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. So not a damn thing you can do about it. nothing. And I love you with all my heart and soul. And that's recovery. That's where we can get to. And when I get off track with that, you know what? It's really simple. And then share it with somebody that you trust. And there's a lot of people to trust in here too. If you have trust issues, I get that too. You will find out that there are a lot of people in here who earned trust, who are trustworthy. And so don't go away. Keep coming back. It works. And we're worth it. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. It was wonderful. As usual. Thank you very much. Been such a pleasure to know you. Of course, my sponsor said, get nude at night and look in the mirror and find five things about your body that you like. So, and that was quite different for me. Okay. We are on a CHIPS. Is there any announcements? We have a seventh tradition I put in here. Also on October the 13th through the 15th, right, Beth? We are going to have a Texas State Convention in Houston, and it will be at a hotel in the Galleria, which is the biggest shopping area and the biggest tourist thing in Houston. And so if you go to oahouston.org, you will find out all the information soon about it. And it's 6 months away, but it will be great. Is there any other announcements? Okay, we have another good speaker next week, and looking forward to that. We give out a desire chip at this meeting. It's an outward sign of an inward desire to do something about your eating or your eating habits that are harming your body. Is there anybody that would like to have a virtual desire chip? Please just unmute and give me your name and I'll pass it to you. It's free. You spent millions of dollars on food. So you can, this one's free. Okay. Very good. Okay. We will be back next week. We close this meeting with a reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you would like to follow along and you have your big book, it's on page 558. If you'll go down to the bottom of the page, the last sentence, it starts with God, and we always have Bronwyn read it when she's here. Bronwyn, it's yours.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. Just so you'll know, it's 85 degrees in Houston today. Yeah. Bottom of page 558. God willing, we members of AA may never again have to deal with drinking, but we have to deal with sobriety every day. And how do we do it? By learning, through practicing the 12 steps and through sharing at meetings, how to cope with the problems we look to booze to solve back in our drinking days. For example, we're told in AA we cannot afford resentments and self-pity, so we learn to avoid these festering mental attitudes. Similarly, we rid ourselves of the guilt and remorse as we clean out the garbage from our past. From our minds through the fourth and fifth steps of our recovery program. We learn how to level out the emotional swings that got us into trouble, both when we were up and when we were down. We're taught to differentiate between our wants, which are never satisfied, and our needs, which are always provided for. We cast off the burdens of the past and the anxieties of the future as we begin to live in the present, one day at a time. We're granted the serenity to accept the things we cannot change and thus lose our quickness to anger and our sensitivity to criticism. Above all, we reject fantasizing and accept reality. The more I drank, the more I fantasized everything. I imagined getting even for hurts and rejections. In my mind's eye, I played and replayed scenes in which I was plucked magically from the bar where I stood nursing a drink and instantly exalted to some position of power and prestige. I lived in a dream world. AA led me gently from this fantasizing to embrace reality with open arms, and I found it beautiful. For at last, I was at peace with myself and with others and with God. Thanks, Joe, for letting me do service.
Thank you. And if you guys have been on the meeting before, we beat the clock. Her clock goes off at 8 o'clock. So a few moments of silence, and then we'll close with the OA promise, which is I put my hand in yours. If you will stay muted and just join me, makes it a little bit easier. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We're all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. And again, Tom, thank you very much. Really great to see you.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, Tom, I won't nap boo you. Yay!
It was fantastic.
That was amazing. Fantastic. Thank you, sir.